free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.
Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Selected as one of Variety's 10 stars behind the camera, German-born cinematographer Markus Förderer has quickly developed an impressive resume of visually unique and critically acclaimed feature films. Hell marked his feature film debut, earning him a number of awards. He followed that with sci-fi drama I, Origins, which was awarded at the 2014 Sundance Film Festival, and I Remember, which premiered at the 2015 Berlin Film Festival and won the 2016 German Camera Award for Best Cinematography. Markus collaborated with director Roland Emmerich on the landmark period drama Stonewall and blockbuster Independence Day, Resurgence. He worked with Hell director Tim Filbaum again on the Oscar-nominated feature film September 5. In 2019, Markus became the youngest active member of the American Society of Cinematographers. We talked to him via video call for this interview. Markus, welcome to Deep Dive Genre. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. But also, before we start, let me just add September 5, the day the terror went live, one of your most recent projects, was nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay, and you yourself won the German Film Award for Best Cinematography for it. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
However, today we're going to talk about your first feature film, or your feature film debut as a cinematographer, Hell, which was released in 2011, a while back. But in light of recent heat waves and other weather phenomenon, is more topical than ever. To start us off, can you tell us a little bit about your journey of becoming a cinematographer?
I grew up in a small town in the Black Forest. Mm-hmm. I have to say, I didn't know anybody in the film industry. And I think I knew early on I want to pursue this kind of career. I shot some short films and I moved to Munich for an internship at ARRI camera rental because I was told there you can learn everything about cameras. And I met a lot of fantastic cinematographers like Karl Walter Lindenlau, who shot the first Independence Day, for example. He came for pre-production, and many others. And then I went to, since I moved to Munich, I applied to film school in Munich and was luckily accepted. And during that time, I met Tim Filbaum, and they talked about this post-apocalyptic project. Yeah. And I'm like a big science fiction fan. And when I heard about this, I'm like, I would love to help you and get involved. And we started shooting tests about how we can convey the illusion of heat in a movie theater, because usually movie theaters are air-conditioned and dark. And how can you really blind the audience and create that sensation of heat? So we did a lot of experimentation and tests with like lens flares and heat distortion in front of the lens and that kind of thing.
How do you choose your stories, or how do you commit to a project?
I think it always comes down to the script. Like if there's something that really captivates me as an audience member, like I always ask myself, do I want to watch this film myself? And if I'm not 100% convinced, I think it's dangerous sometimes to take on a project where you don't have a certain creative energy behind it. And I'm trying to really follow my instinct of what I personally think is interesting. And because then I have the best ideas and the best collaboration with a director and really can bring something to the table. I think it's dangerous to just do a job and make a film. And then, of course, finding the right collaborators is so important, like the right director and producers and other creative departments like production designer. It's all very important to find the right environment to do something unique.
Yeah. You already mentioned that you got involved in the film Hell because you and Tim met at the film school. And you mentioned that you're a big fan of science fiction. And as we know, in Europe, that's not necessarily an easy genre, sometimes obviously due to budget sizes. How creative did you and also, Tim, have to be to give Hell its particular look?
Yeah, it was Tim's first film and also my first feature film. So the budget was quite limited, especially for a post-apocalyptic genre where the story, for who hasn't seen the film, the story is like the sun is so bright that you can't go outside without protecting your skin. It's like the sun is extremely dangerous. So everything had to look burned, like the trees couldn't have any leaves. Everything had to look burned and scorched. So we decided to shoot actually in the winter time when the trees have no leaves, which made it particularly challenging. Like us trying to fight this in the beginning, is that like we have to create like not even a California sun would be enough. Like we have to create this sensation of a really strong sunlight, and then you're in the winter in Germany, it will be overcast most of the time. That's going to be a big challenge, and that actually turned out to be the key to create this extreme look. And I learned so much. I have to say it was the best decision to shoot it in the winter. And then we overexposed. Like I did tests by overexposing 5 stops and finding the right lenses that create certain lens flares to give the illusion that there's a hard sunlight, even if it's not. Like there's an opening scene in the film when they go out of their car, like the car is all taped up with newspapers. So they're protected from the sunlight. There's only a little for the driver to see. So when he, it's like Lars Eidinger, when he steps outside for the first time and you see the exterior world, that's actually, it was a rainy day. Like the
oh, wow.
And I thought like I would never work in the film industry again. This is my first film and it's going to look overcast and terrible. But we really went for it. We like opened up the iris and we had like 2 movie lights, like HMIs, but they were not very big. And I pointed them directly into the lens to flare the lens and create this heightened look. And then since we established this in the beginning, we knew we have to follow through now throughout the film. So every day was a new challenge. But there's not that much done in post-production. There's only a handful of visual effects.
Okay.
The extreme overexposure, and we used lots of dust in the air to cover up green forests in the deep background or buildings that shouldn't be there. So it's all hidden in overexposure.
And I read in an interview that you guys used the day for night process. Can you explain for our listeners how that decision came about and what the process involves exactly?
Yeah, I think when Tim and I talked about movies and other film references, that usually we had many scenes taking place in the forest at night, and it usually looks quite artificially lit. It's very challenging to shoot in a forest at night. It's pitch black, and the only way to light it, you would put up big cranes with movie lights, and it look always like spotlights or some street lights. And in our world, there was no more electricity, so we couldn't have any. There wouldn't be any artificial lights or street lights. So everything had to be moonlit or that kind of look, or like a long magic hour, blue hour. So we did some tests in shooting day for night where we basically underexpose and we diffuse the light around the actors so it doesn't feel like harsh sunlight. And then I shifted the color temperature in the camera so it looks like more like a cool night. And that was a nice contrast to the hot, warm, sunny days. And that allowed us also to shoot in big areas. So we went for a couple of scenes. We went to a area in Corsica where there was a forest fire to get some of the wide shots. And we had like scenes where actors would run through the forest at full speed. So this allowed us to cover an area because it was lit basically by daylight and show the scope of that world.
Yeah. You mentioned that you and Tim started talking very early in regards to how to get that look and how to show the heat. How soon before production did the two of you start planning the shots and frames?
I think we did some early tests, like research how to create heat in cinema, basically. That was maybe 6, 7, 8 months before the film. And because this was my first feature film, it wasn't clear that I actually was allowed to shoot that project.
Oh, okay.
Fairly close to the shoot. So I didn't know if this is what's going to work out. But because we had shot many tests and I did a lot of research and did some references, we didn't have that much prep time closer to the shoot. But it helped. Like I just did a lot of research and had a good idea where we want to go. Because this extreme overexposure was a time where digital cinematography came up, like still most big projects would shoot on film. And there were only the first prototypes of Alexa cameras just came out, but they were not widely available.
Yeah.
And so we actually chose to shoot on a RED camera, which the early digital cameras, they would not handle bright highlights very well.
Mm-hmm.
And usually cinematographers would like avoid shooting digital because of this. And I thought in our case with the harsh sunlight, that's exactly what we need. We want the illusion of a very harsh sunlight. So mm-hmm. a camera that clips and burns out the highlights is actually very good for us to create this look. So it was quite an unusual approach, and that led hopefully to its own visual storytelling.
Can you tell us your favorite scene from Hell and give our listeners a bit of a behind the scenes background why that might be? I mean, you mentioned in an interview, it's the scene where the prisoners break free. Is that still the one?
I think that's probably the one, because that's, like I mentioned earlier, to create the illusion of brightness and to blind an audience in a movie theater or in a big TV. Like today we have HDR televisions that get quite bright, but in a movie theater, even a bright white projected screen is not that bright. So to blind the audience, you have to actually build up to that moment. And so we purposefully lit the scenes leading up to that escape very dark, very moody. So the mm-hmm. Hannah Hertzsprung, the actress, is going with a small flashlight into that stable in a farm, like this abandoned mm-hmm. farm, into like the darkest corner, so that the eyes of the audience adjust to the darkness. It's like this near pitch black environment. So after, and I was reading about it, there's a real phenomenon in the human eye. When you're exposed to extreme darkness, around 15 minutes, you get into a night vision mode. So where it's like a chemical process where the receptors get way more sensitive to light. That's how we can see suddenly at night when you get up and it's pitch black. And it's a very monochromatic experience. Like we don't really see colors, but it's almost black and white. But then when you might notice from yourself, when you then switch on a light, it's almost painful.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is the sensation we have to create. So we have this dark environment, and then our characters try to escape. They're captured in this barn, and they break free suddenly and run outside into a almost white environment. And it's almost a bit like in a horror film.
Mm-hmm.
And usually you would use darkness in a horror film to create tension and scare the audience. But in our case, we used the opposite. We used the bright white light that you cannot really see where's the danger. And that was also challenging to shoot, because we had only, like I mentioned, with two big HMI movie lights, but they were not strong enough to create this bright light in such a big barn. Like there were like gaps in that barn to create the illusion that there's bright, blinding sunlight outside. So we used big mirrors to really reflect the actual sunlight.
Wow.
Several mirrors, and we had electricians, they would follow, pan and tilt the mirrors into our camera. So wherever, like Tim and I, we both operated a camera, and wherever we moved, they would hit us with those reflected sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the end of the day, we were totally sunburned from the front and the back because we had several mirrors hitting us. But the moment the mirror would not point at the camera, it would completely fall apart and it would look suddenly
mm-hmm.
like what it was that we shot in, I don't know, February or so.
In
Bavaria.
Wow. Obviously, the light and the heat play such an important part in the story. How do you still set visual accents when you work with that much brightness? Looking at the projects that you've done, there's quite a lot of science fiction, and, you know, already established that is something that you're interested in. What draws you to that particular genre, do you think?
I personally enjoy watching all kinds of films, and I also would say I'm open to shooting anything. But I think as a young moviegoer, like I was particularly fascinated by filmmaking. Like it's an empty canvas. You can
mm-hmm.
create anything. Yes, you can tell a drama with two people sitting at a kitchen table, but you can at the same time use that big canvas to build a whole world that the audience has never seen before. And I think that that's what drew me, especially in the beginning, like, wow, how can we show the most interesting world or discover something that an audience hasn't seen before, mm-hmm. hasn't experienced before, and then use that as a vehicle to transport, of course, a human story, just to visually use the medium as much as possible. I think in this day and age where so many people rely on visual effects, it's almost a lot of the magic is lost, because I feel like audiences can tell, even with like on big budget films, when something is not real or wasn't shot for real. But I'm always going back to the classics, like the original Alien or Blade Runner or 2001 A Space Odyssey, that feel very tactile. And that's really informed still today how we approach films and how to shoot a scene. Like an example is, for example, in September 5, which again, I shot with Tim Thalebaum, we used a miniature helicopter and a miniature airport. Mm-hmm. Just to make it tactile, because I knew that this is a period film, but it's based on true events. We have to be authentic, and it has to feel real. The moment the audience feels this is not real, or even parts of it are created in a computer, I think you lose the authenticity. And weirdly enough, a miniature, because it's captured by a real camera and light travels through a lens, feels more real to me than a computer-generated image. Like, There's amazing visual effects, and they're useful, and we use them, of course, as well. But you have to be very careful not to rely overly on just one technique. And it's a bit like in a magician. You have to always change up your techniques to create an authentic experience.
Making a film or a series takes up a lot of time. And how long are you usually involved in a movie? How much time before and after? And what for you is the most important part of the process?
It really depends on the project, but sometimes I'm involved years ahead of, like in September 5, for example, I think 2 or 3 years before we started filming, started talking about that project, and we went to the Olympic Village several times to scout it, like long before there was clear that we have a green light to do it. And that's what I usually like the best, when I have a lot of time to think about a project and maybe even go away and shoot something else. But in the back of your head, you collect ideas and start collecting visuals and references. But then actually I was filming in Berlin and a pilot for a TV show, Constellation. Mm-hmm. And I had only, I think, 10 days or so after we wrapped this to start shooting September 5. So it was very beneficial that for years I had it in the back of my mind, and we scouted the location several times, so I could really dive into it quickly with Tim and the producers. And then post-production is also very important. Like I'm not actively involved in the editing. Sometimes the directors show me a rough cut and we discuss it. But then at the very end, I come back for doing color timing, which is very important to finalize and polish the look that was established. Also making sure that it's translates well to what the audience will see, like being it on a TV or a big screen, because you can spend as much time as you want in lighting and on set and use the best cameras and lenses. There's a couple of knobs in the final post-production. You can destroy it all, or you can make it really sing and hit the tone, because it's all digital post-production. It's very difficult, even if you have very talented colorists, they were not evolved in the beginning or have a different sensibility. So it's very important, I think, that the key creatives come together and make sure, with the right colorist, of course, to get the best, not just the best looking, but the right looking story. And it's not always obvious, right? It's not just a technical thing, make the whites white and blacks black. But sometimes, like in the case, for example, on September 5, we wanted to evoke this feeling of a 70s film, or what we talked about earlier, Hell, which is, would be, it's like five stops overexposed. Like the initial intuition of the colorist would be to bring everything down, but as it the charm is just to play it in that extreme fringes of exposure and see what happens there.
Yeah. Now, I know a lot of people who are in the audiences don't particularly like Terrence Malick films, but I really, really appreciate the way he works with the camera and the way he manages to do exactly that. You know, like it's a very particular look. And in the end, it's more like a poem than a traditional film. Very important to pull everything together, and you know, the sound and the coloring, and I think a lot of people underestimate the amount of work that goes into that. I have a few rapid fire questions for you at the end. Obviously, we've established that you do like science fiction films, but is there another genre or maybe a particular story that you would still like to be involved in?
I'm open to anything, but like I would love to do a real true love story. Rarely made, like there's romantic comedies or something, or some spy thriller. I think it would be very interesting.
Yeah, What would you say is the biggest misconception about the work of a cinematographer from people outside of the industry?
Yeah, it's very different. There's different perceptions. Some people understand or don't really understand what we're doing. But same with me when I started making films and research, I thought the director's doing everything. So, but to understand that there's specialists in each department and we work closely together with the director to find the images. And some people think we're only doing lighting, but it's different from each project to project. So that's why it's hard to qualify. But like I see it as my job to help the director find the best, strongest visuals and look for that film.
Yeah.
And it's always a process. Yes, sometimes people think there's a genius like a Kubrick or somebody who has everything in their mind from day one. But then you also brought up Terrence Malick. I think the truth is actually a film, you discover a film while you make it, in pre-production and of course while you make it. And I'm totally a believer in pre-production and preparing everything as good as you can. But on the moment we step on a set, this is what I really learned over the years, observing what the actors are doing and be prepared to throw it all out of the window and say, hey, maybe they sit here in the corner by the window and we tell this in one shot, what do you think? And be able to react. And because that's why pre-production is so important, because you spend so much time with the director and discussing the scenes, that makes it possible to, even under high time pressure, make quick decisions and be able to change and adapt. Because filmmaking is always, you always change. Nothing happens really the way you planned it either, the weather doesn't behave, or you lose a location, or you lose an actor, or you have suddenly only 20 minutes to complete that scene where you planned so many shots. So it's always, that's the fun of it. You have to be creative and intuitive in the moment.
And talking about change, how has the work changed over the course of the years for you? And that can be an external change or an internal one, like how you approach the work.
I mean, I see it, filmmaking becomes more and more advanced, especially in pre-production, like on bigger films with the art department and with pre-visualization. And like we're planning more and more ahead of time. Like even now in my last film, we used Unreal Engine in the lighting department to pre-visualize how the lighting will actually behave in a big set that's before it's even built.
Yeah.
Because the timeline's also tight.
Yeah.
We don't have much time to light, so it has to be all figured out ahead of time. So there's more and more planning and pre-production in like 3D software and with Unreal Engine, for example, happening. That's quite fascinating and also a challenge, of course, to stay on top of it and use the right tools and also don't get distracted by it, because at the end of the day, right, we're telling an emotional story and that's a balance to find.
And finally, can you share which project you are currently working on or maybe you will be working on next?
I just finished principal photography for a movie that comes out next year. It's called Voltron. That's in post-production. It's based on a Japanese anime. It's a sci-fi fantasy for young audiences. I can't say too much about it, but that's coming out next.
Hey. And that was it. Thank you so much for sitting down with us today, Marcus. It was a pleasure.
Thanks so much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the national information and advisory center for the promotion of German films worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.